I'm listening to the show every morning, and you can say it's grand. It's not grand if you're not on it, though.
OTB's Mount Rushmore.
Some talent in Cork, isn't there? Wow. A few of the GAA boys weren't happy, but it was my sporting hero. I was contesting, I think, against Jimmy Barry Murphy. So once you're in that company, everything is good.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
It's very, very special. Believe me, I think it becomes more special when you're on the coach, because it's something, unfortunately, inside me that's ultra competitive, and I need to be there.
Catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM on the OTB Podcast Network. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
First, though, we're delighted to say yesterday afternoon we caught up with Floyd Landis for a feature interview. The convicted doper and 2006 Tour de France winner is one of the most important characters in the Lance Armstrong story. Enjoy.
All right, I'm delighted to say we've got Floyd Landis with us to talk about the second episode in the new Lance Armstrong documentary series, which has been airing on ESPN over the last couple of weeks. Floyd, thanks a million for taking the time to talk to us, first off.
Yeah, man, good to chat with you guys again.
Tell me, what's that whole process like of actually being in a documentary and waiting for it to come out to see, well, how much are they using my stuff and how have I been portrayed in this?
Yeah, that's the thing. It was a long process. I don't know exactly what Marina was her name that produced it. I don't know what her initial goal was as far as timing for making it, but I did the interview it must have been 2 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. Not three, but it was a while. And initially she reached out, and I figured, I mean, there was a time when I was, if ESPN said they were doing something on Lance, I would say, no, I pretty much can figure out what this is going to be like. But not that there's not a problem with ESPN, but generally Lance had, you know, some kind of control over what his editorial content looked like. In this case, I was a little more optimistic that, you know, they were going to just try to tell the real story. Because at that point, all the facts were out there, right? Lance had case yet, but I mean, everything else that was meaningful or material to the story was already sort of known. And I'd hoped at some point, you know, if I shouldn't say I'd hoped, but I mean, I figured if somebody wanted to tell the story properly, it was going to be hours worth of video, right? This is a fairly complicated story and complex, at least. So I agreed to do it just because I figured, you know, I've been through enough negative press anyway. What's a little more if that's going to just be about making Lance look good? And initially when I met her, she was pretty impressed with Lance. She had come over from Aspen to Leadville, which is probably a 3-hour drive. And she had just been at Lance's house. And I think that was the first time she'd interviewed him for that. When I talked to her about her experience with him, I was a little bit worried because she seemed kind of, you know, impressed with his charisma and his ability to kind of, you know, tell his side of the story. But at the end of the day, I think it came out pretty objective. I mean, it's a difficult story to tell, right? There's a lot of people involved, and there's a lot of just, even with every single character, even including Lance, there's some parts on both sides of the fence, right? Because, you know, yeah, he was mean to everybody, but he also was, in some senses, a victim of the whole system to begin with. So, I sat down with her for, I don't know, it must have been 3 or 4 hours, which is a lot of content. So you never know what a part of that's going to get used. But, you know, all things considered, I think it was all right. I mean, it's hard for me to know. I know it was produced for a population that isn't necessarily obsessed with cycling or probably doesn't know most of the people in it or the details. So there's a lot to tell there that isn't really interesting to me or you or people that obsess over cycling to begin with, right? But I think all in all, it was well done. I mean, there's more to it, but it's hard to – nobody wants to watch 20 hours of that, right?
Yeah, I couldn't make up my mind if, like, this is the last conversation I'm ever going to have about Lance Armstrong or if this is going to set me off on another like deep dive. That's the bit that I'm kind of like, have I is this it now? Have I had enough? There's definitely a lot riding on this Floyd. From that kind of perspective of the objectivity of it and whether or not it was worthwhile yet, I'm still uncertain because, so we had Tyler Hamilton on last week and we'd had him on about 18 months ago as well. And the first time he was on, he was like, look, if cycling or indeed any sport wants to recover from a situation like it found itself in, everybody needs to sit around the table and say, I took this drug, I got it here, cost me this much money, it had this impact on me, and this is how my program worked. And this is the program that I would do now if I was doping, so that we can all begin to find out how it works. And you need to have everybody telling the truth for that. And I still feel like Lance is saying he didn't dope until, you know, he only took certain amounts of drugs very early on in his career as opposed to taking everything, even though I think Julian McCourt has somebody on the record saying he was taking loads of stuff. And also he claims he didn't dope when he came back. And yet there's like, I don't know, was it the recent report or somewhere along the way, there's a piece of evidence that suggests it's like a 1 in 1 million chance that he wasn't doping when he came back. So I don't feel like we quite got the full truth.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I 100% agree that if you're going to make any positive impact with, you know, as far as changing the system or changing the opportunities that young cyclists have, then you got to all be just be honest. And you have to, but in order to do that, you have to be in a position where everybody's got sort of the same free pass to speak openly too. And, you know, as far as Lance goes, he's still, I don't know what he's holding on to, but he's got his idea of what he wants his, you know, his public image to be. And so he's got an incentive to hold on to that. I mean, I think I'm just guessing here, because I haven't talked to the guy in 10 years, but I think he still holds on to a real, I mean, he really cares that people know that he was a great athlete, you know, notwithstanding drugs, whatever else went on, you know, being an asshole to people. And I think people know that. I mean, I don't think anybody discounts that. Like, I don't think there's anyone out there that thinks that, you know, just an average cyclist, a cyclist of average talent, I should say, could take the drugs he took and win the Tour de France 7 times. There's a lot more to it than that, and he deserves credit for that, and I don't think anyone's discounting that. But from my point of view, I think that's what he's holding on to. Like, look, I came back and I raced clean and I still got third and I was 40, you know, old, 45 years old, whatever it was. But I don't know what value it has, but for some reason, I'm with you. He's holding on to something that probably doesn't really matter, and it would be more beneficial for everyone if everyone just told the truth, not just him too, but Johan. I mean, look, Johan's an articulate guy. I actually enjoyed his kind of parts of it. I wish he would. And he says he did. I don't really know what he told the investigation that the UCI had, which I don't think anybody has any faith that the UCI would do anything with any information anyway. So he may have, but you're right. If everyone doesn't tell the truth, then you can't really get to a point where you can start over. And I mean, look, I don't know. I know you guys have a fairly jaded opinion on things just like I do, but I don't think anything's changed, frankly. That's the sad thing for me, is that we didn't take the opportunity we had here to try to figure out a solution. Part of it's the fault of the athletes for not wanting to really be forthcoming, and part of it's the fault of the anti-doping agencies for not really understanding how to get people to tell the truth, right? You can't offer a reduced sentence. You got to offer a free pass. There is no reduced sentence. It's all about public humiliation. No one cares about the 1 year off. They care about the fact that they'll never be able to talk about anything for the rest of their life except drugs. It's binary. That's the problem.
There's a lot in there, Floyd, from, you mentioned Sky, you mentioned the UCI, the anti-doping agencies, which we'll all get to. But just on the theory of what Lance is trying to achieve here, it seems to me that part of him is definitely trying to get reintroduced to society in some level. I don't know what that level is or what he wants that to be. But certainly it seemed to me that once Oprah was done, he felt that that was it. That was the nuclear bomb, as he puts it in the documentary. And everything from that point was him saving his image, or him at least looking to have his image recovered in some shape or form. And for further truth to then come out, would probably not help to that end.
Yeah, I mean, he comes right out and says that he doesn't want that back, and he is in some sense glad that it happened. But then on the other hand, he's still extraordinarily mad at me for causing it. So I'm probably more on the side of the fence with you that he wants some of that back. And look, I don't fault him. I don't think anyone faults him for that. He had a great life. And, you know, if you enjoy that kind of attention and energy around you with all these people, you know, that love you, then it's hard to not have that when you did once have it. And to some extent, I don't think I'm alone. I think most people would forgive him and say, look, he deserves to have some say. And because the guy's he has a real story to tell, and it's probably got some good, you know, morals to it, but it's got to come with a new lens, right? And he doesn't want to do that. He wants to be his old, you know, obstinate self, and whatever. I mean, you can respect that as the character in the story. I guess it's respectful. He's just the most defiant asshole on earth. But that's, I mean, at this point, we're all grown up, man. Let's figure this out. And I don't know, man. He's an interesting guy.
Why doesn't he like you so much? The vitriol towards you is fairly intense. Anybody who's even done a brief look at the details knows why he might have not been too happy with you in the first place. But why is it you that is the name that is held up by Lance Armstrong as the person he particularly dislikes right now?
Well, I think in his mind, and you know, we will never know if he's right or not. In his mind, if I hadn't done that, then everything would still be the same. But again, that can't be reconciled with the statement that, you know, he's glad it happened and it made him a better person. Like he's got to pick a storyline that makes sense, and it just doesn't.
Like that was his nuclear bomb that he talks about. He says
that's what he meant. Yeah, I think that's what he meant. But I think it's directed at me as I'm the reason that it all came down. I mean, there was a bunch of other reasons that, you know, just, you know, one little twist of fate and it would have come down anyway, but it didn't. And so here I am, and I'm the guy to blame. And if you need someone to blame, I mean, I guess if you just want to look at it in a vacuum, then yeah, great, you can blame me, but it doesn't solve anything. And you know, being that angry for that long, I mean, frankly, it's impressive. Like, I don't know if I could stay that angry for that long at anyone.
If they had let you come back and join the team when you were coming back from your ban, would you have reached the point of frustration that you reached and sent the emails that blew the whistle?
Probably not. I mean, someone asked me that yesterday, and I hadn't thought about it in a long time. And they asked it more in the context of, well, you know, you shouldn't be, you know, put on a pedestal here as some guy that did anything good, because you probably wouldn't have said anything. And I didn't, that's not what I was trying to do anyway. I don't want to be on a pedestal. Frankly, I'd rather just never talk about it again. I'm with you. But I mean, the fact is that when it happened, and it is purely coincidental, like I wasn't really even thinking about it at the time, but all it would have taken was another probably 6 months, and the statute of limitations on everything, on the legal cases, on all of it would have run. I mean, I think I've filed that lawsuit within maybe a month of the statute of limitations running out on the last event that would have applied to it. So probably not. I mean, there wouldn't have been any cause for bringing a grand jury investigation. Statute would have run on that. WADA, of course, makes shit the fuck up as they go, so who knows what the statute of limitations was on that. But the only reason that WADA got any information in the first place was because the federal government leveraged it out of people. So I think it's safe to say that, you know, if he had done that, enough time would have passed and wouldn't have been nearly as catastrophic at the very least.
So I think that bit, it's his hubris, and I wasn't really sure that how much of an asshole he was came across in the second part of the documentary, because he is so charming. That's the thing.
Yeah, he's good.
really good. Like, that's the bit that actually I am continuously fascinated by, the bit where he's like, oh, it's really bad. So I was in full attack mode. It's like, poor Lance, he had to go in attack mode against poor Emma. life he ruined. Oh, it's a gift that he, I don't know where that gift comes from. It's probably weakness.
No, he's very, very good, man. He does have some very, very impressive skills. And look, I want to believe that inside him somewhere there's an empathetic person, and he's just an intense guy. But I really don't know, because, you know, part of his concern for Ulrich's well-being is a result of the unfairness as it applies to him. So it's hard to know really where he really comes from.
That was very interesting, that very last monologue of the documentary, where he starts to point out the double standards that exist around the world in cycling within various countries. Do you go along with that at all?
I mean, it's undeniable. If you just look at, and to this day, it continues. I mean, like, I hate to just fixate on Sky and the Chris Froome thing, but they provided absolutely zero justification for it and went against their own rules and just said, that's all you're getting. I mean, that's not, there is absolutely no excuse for what happened there other than just politics. And if you're going to have politics involved in it, then you don't get to say we're making things fair and play politics at the same time. Those two can't be accomplished at the same time.
It's that hypocrisy, I think, which has always informed anybody who gets caught. It's the sense that it's unfair that I'm getting caught and being singled out. I don't know if you remember, there was a Tour de France rider who won the polka dot jersey, Gert-Jan Tunisier, in the 80s, maybe early 90s. And he wouldn't smile for the whole tour, even though he was winning stage after stage in the polka dot jersey. It was because he'd been isolated and had been banned. It might have been a 3-month ban, because that was how much of a ban you would have got back in those days. And it was the injustice that was preventing him from celebrating. At least that's how it was reported on the TV coverage that we were watching as kids. And that always struck me as a bit weird. Like, it seemed like the hypocrisy was the anger that drove you as well, that you were being singled out despite the fact that you were coming from the US postal team, where you knew just how much the doping was going on.
Yeah, it's so, man, there's so many layers to this stupidity of it all. But, you know, Vaughters, let's use Jonathan Vaughters. He's a great example of hypocrisy to begin with. So he's got, on his bio and his Twitter account, it says he's dedicated his life to anti-doping. I mean, I don't even know where to begin with that. So
can I play devil's advocate for a minute on Vaughters, right? Because I'm interested in this. Like, is there a template there? If you take yourself out of the situation, and I know it's really hard to do, but is there a template there for somebody who was on the inside to become a whistleblower and to be, I don't know if it's accommodated in the sport or to find a future? Like, should we have room for another Vaughters to come along from a team that may or may not be doping now, but who would come and publish chapter and verse? What would their future be?
So, yeah, I'm not sure. I think right now it's through and through so thoroughly just kind of inequitable on every level that there isn't a way for anybody on either side, even in the anti-doping agencies, there isn't really a way for them to do anything positive. I mean, you even have effectively whistleblowers from inside there. You have some people who have left the anti-doping agencies and just say, you know what, fuck it, this isn't even worth it. So I don't know. When I use those guys as an example, or Chris Froome or anything else, I don't know Chris Froome, and I don't have any hard feelings towards him at all. I don't even honestly care if he's doping. He's stuck in the same situation that we were in. And that's a result of what we went through having had no effect on anything, which at the end of the day, what really bothers me is, you know, they nearly killed a couple of us, and not that we're innocent or didn't deserve it, depending on your point of view, but they went to that extreme and didn't actually. And so I don't know what where the where the role should be, or how you tell if someone's contrite or, you know, honest going forward. That's why every once in a while I just come to the conclusion, and I've said it before, that it might be best to just allow it. Like, if your goal is really to make it fair, which is just another stupid philosophical conversation, because that's not a thing anyway. But if that's your goal, is to make it as fair as you can, right now, given the tools you have and given the situation, if you have two working brain cells, you can only conclude that it has to be allowed. Just let it happen.
It then obviously becomes some variation of Formula One, where the best constructors win, the best doctors win. But you're right, it is.
But literally, that's what it is now. I mean, and the worst part now is you have to pretend that it's not.
The attitude to protect the sport seems to be the most ingrained defensive operation that you see, and it goes all the way back to Armstrong. I guess it goes back to the people before that who might have been at risk of being caught too. Again, you always wonder, like, why is this? And I guess they touch on this a little bit in the documentary, where I can't remember who it was. It might have been Tyler was talking about Hein Verbruggen would be on the phone. Lance would ring him up and complain about something, and the proximity and the closeness of that relationship. I think it would have been good to tease that out a bit more as well, just to kind of see exactly how easy it was for somebody in Lance's situation to manipulate the entire sport by talking to the guy whose job it is to keep the sport clean.
Yeah, so there's a couple of those just more obscure things, obscure if you're not a cycling fan, that probably were deemed not that appealing to, you know, the American public. It was kind of made for the non-cycling public. But those would be more interesting. That and how it came to be that the, you know, the grand jury in, and again, I want to hedge this with saying, I don't think Lance should have been sent to prison. I didn't have any say over that. And if I did, I would say that probably was a waste of, you know, taxpayer money to spend 2 years on it. But the only way to get any real story out of that would be for Lance to tell it, and he's not ready.
Because there was a sense, and it was clear that if you want to win the tour, if you think you're good enough to win the tour, there's the door. That's what he was talking. He could have been saying it about you, but obviously, I think in that instance, he was talking about Tyler Hamilton. And there's a sense that Tyler certainly feels that Lance got him popped as soon as he left. And I guess that's a warning to everybody in the peloton, you know, cross me and I will get you popped.
I mean, he said it to me, Lance. So Lance, I mean, I don't know if I was the first person or the only person to tell Tyler, but I was the one that told him that, because, and I took it as Lance telling me as a threat, because this was 2004 when he knew that I was looking to leave the team. He, after that Vontu stage, he was complaining about, you know, Ebon Mayo and Tyler and how fast they went. And he said, look, these guys took it too far. So, you know, I've talked to Verbruggen about it and they're going to take care of it. But it was meant to be an implicit threat to me. And yeah, that's what happened. I mean, there's no denying that, that's the end result. It would be highly coincidental if, after all that, you know, that just so happened to be the time that they got caught. In my mind, that's how it happened. I mean, there's some small off chance that it was coincidental, but I don't know, man, that's a stretch.
Okay, what is the impact of being on the other side of that conversation from your perspective then, when you're kind of getting to a stage of your career where legitimately you should be thinking about making enough money to protect your family forever, right? That's the whole point of getting to this and competing in sport. You do it for money and it's your job. And also you do it for love, fair enough. I get it. That's the start of it. But at this point, it's like, money. 100%. Does that make the rage simmer at that point, or do you become a kind of quiet assassin? I'm going to pick you up at some point in the future and I'm going to wait. What is the impact of seeing a threat so nakedly executed like that?
Well, I thought to myself, and I hadn't committed to leaving the team yet, and I'd hoped that, I mean, part of me wanted to stay on the team because Lance, you know, he was going to win his sixth tour that year, and he did. And I just figured, look, this, you know, because once in a while he would even he understood the magnitude of the risk he was taking, right? No matter how much control you have, that there's there's physical evidence of this happening, and mistakes can happen. Anything can happen, right? And you can be exposed. Like, that's a real thing. No matter how protected you are by politics, there's real risk involved in this. So I thought that after he won six, he would be the happiest guy on earth to never fucking do it again. But he just doesn't know when to quit, right? So I was thinking, okay, well, after this tour, maybe it wouldn't, and I didn't expect them to necessarily just say, okay, Floyd, you're going to be the leader now, but that there would be a vacuum there, and a leader would be, you know, picked to go sort of follow that up if Lance was going to retire. And I mean, honestly, it never even crossed my mind that he would want to race again. But when I talked to him about it during that tour, while they were trying to get me to sign another contract, he wouldn't give me a direct answer about whether he's going to race again. And in my mind, I'm thinking, like, I don't, you know, three was enough. Like, I don't need to stay here and help you win again. I'd rather go. I mean, I was in great shape that year. I had a great tour, and I wanted to race, at least have an opportunity to race for myself. And he just wasn't willing to give me that. So, you know, I left, which in hindsight probably was the end of all of it. But, yeah. And I can't remember what the point of the question was, but that's kind of how it went. I was going to say that, you know, that implicit threat about Tyler was always in the back of my mind, but I also knew that there was it was, his career was at that point very near the end, if it wasn't at the end. So sooner or later he was going to be gone. And I didn't think that he was foolish enough to, or would be foolish enough to try to manipulate things after he was gone. There would be no benefit to him to do that other than just, you know, sheer pettiness. I'm not suggesting that that's what happened to me, but I was in the context of, is this safe for me to go race elsewhere? I was pretty comfortable that that wasn't going to be a risk for me. So I kind of moved on, but that's why I didn't stay, because he just wouldn't give me any clarity on whether he wanted to race again. And then he did. I mean, he went and won it a seventh time, which, again, you know, he wants to attribute everything that happened to me and to having come back. But I think he would be, probably benefit him. It would benefit him to look back and just look at some of the other things he did. Like, did you really need to win seven and rub it in everyone's face? That was a bit much. Mm. I mean, even if it came down later, then there's less to say you're the greediest asshole on earth, right? He gave him every reason to hate him, every single one.
We need whistleblowers. And that's why your contribution to this story, I think, really can't be undersold. I did want to ask you, Floyd, how did you get caught? Given how brilliant U.S. Postal were for such a long period of time at managing things, how did you end up getting popped? In retrospect, what caused the testosterone ratio to go through the roof? Apart from taking testosterone, obviously.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I mean, look, I followed the same formula that they did, and the testing hadn't really meaningfully changed in those 2 years. So I don't know.
Yeah. Were you doing blood bags in the middle of the tour? Cause Tyler told us a story about the blood bags and the kind of blood dripping out and how dangerous that was. And cause look, the for people who are unfamiliar, you have a really bad day. I think stage 16, stage 17 is a really amazing day. And then that's the day that they test you for, and pop you for that. Did you know that you were going to have that amazing day that day? Were the drugs that spectacular that you were like, yeah, I feel supercharged today?
No, I could see how it'd be easy to interpret everything, you know, with drugs being the major factor, but things happen in races anyway, where you have good and bad days. And that was just by coincidence. A lot of things happened there that allowed that to result in the way it went. I lost enough time that they had kind of written me off. Like, if I had only lost 3 minutes, they never would have let me go in the first place. They could have kept me with the Peloton. They didn't want to spend the chips that they wanted to save for the last climb on the first climb. So they had to make a decision. And had I not lost, you know, 8 or 9 minutes, they would absolutely have kept me with them. It might have resulted in a group of 10 guys at the top of the first climb, but then the Peloton would have come back together for the most part, and we would have ridden it out and just gone a little slower up the final climb, and that would have been the end. But because they just decided this guy's 9 minutes, we'll just kind of all gamble, and then they just waited too long and didn't get organized. it was more a result of just bad tactical decisions than it was of drugs. I mean, I put out 320 watts or whatever it was on average, which is a lot for that amount of time. But, you know, an average cyclist can go out and do 315 watts. You don't need drugs for that. You could do it for longer. So that was more of a just misjudgment on their part. And one of my, I mean, probably my bigger strength as a cyclist was, you know, lower output for longer periods of time. Like, I wasn't great with the crazy accelerations like Pantani was, or even Lance attacking like that. This was a strength of mine to begin with. So I wouldn't say that drugs played any meaningful role in the bad day or the good day. I mean, I did do blood transfusions, but they don't correspond or correlate to what happened there.
I was always interested in that. Like, can you put down, I'm going to have it today, and straight away the impact is that next day because the hematocrit level goes up and I, you know, I'm 10 tigers, or is it actually it's kind of a slower burn?
I believe I did the blood transfusion, that second one that I did, the night before stage 15. So it doesn't really add up. It doesn't make sense to be the reason for going slow or the reason for going extraordinarily faster than that. So it doesn't. Yeah, I never could make sense of it. It's been a long time, frankly, since I looked at the actual dates, but I never could make sense of it relative to that, because that's a possibility, right? It can happen if it's not stored properly. And I never had this happen to me that I know of, or never had any dramatic, you know, unhealthy effect. So I don't really know, but I have heard of people that, you know, have done a blood transfusion that wasn't either stored properly or done properly or something, and have, you know, been ill the next day. But that's not attributable here.
It's a real, my counter argument to the point you were making earlier on about just letting everybody do it is that, like, we don't know when they're going to be doing it. So we don't know how much of it will be down to, like, so for the next 3 days, Floyd's going to ride absolutely amazing. He's just had a blood bag, and the tactics are, you know, like, I'd love to see a sport where we actually had a system that the riders believed in was doing its best to
catch
people.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd love to see it too. I guess I'm coming from more perspective of, until we have that, do we need to keep, you know, destroying people? I guess that's the point. And just, you know, to be clear, if you allowed EPO, you wouldn't need blood transfusions, because there is a limit to how fast you can go even with drugs, right? So you don't need to augment your blood levels with blood transfusions, but for the fact that there's an EPO test. So then that limits how much EPO you can use. So now you got to figure out another solution. And then coincidentally, EPO ends up being a masking agent for the blood transfusion itself. But if you take that away, you eliminate the most risky thing that the athletes are currently doing, which is blood transfusions.
Floyd, it's a really tricky thing to ever question about how you get around all the problems you've highlighted here today, the problems we've been chatting about for the last few years. Do you honestly believe in the let everybody dope solution, or is there a better way in terms of the UCI and WADA and USADA looking at this?
I mean, I don't know what it is. If there's a better way, I'm more than happy to stand down on that statement, because I would prefer to have what was just suggested, which is a system that everyone believed was fair. And sure, people would try to cheat, and some might get away with it from time to time, but that's not what you have now. What you have now is just thoroughly, you know, ridiculous situation where everyone knows that, at the very least, they know that if the other guys want to do it, they can probably get away with it, which leaves you with an impossible choice. So if there's a way to do that, if there's a way to create a situation where people have relative confidence that they, you know, aren't competing against an entirely dope peloton, then I think everyone wants that. I mean, really, I don't think anybody enjoyed the risk part of it with the, you know, blood transfusions and everything else. That was not pleasant. But my point of view is one of a practical matter, just to say, I haven't heard a solution that even sounds remotely workable otherwise. So what do we do?
And it's part of the fact that you don't see them workable because of the institutions that exist in cycling. Like, if I put this question to you, if money was no object and you were the dictator CEO of a new UCI, a breakaway organization, is there something you could do with all the money in the world and your own anti-doping agency and a brand new organization to give yourself confidence in clean sport in cycling?
Man, that's the thing, is it, and I don't want it to come off as sounding like pointing fingers at them because they're failing and we should just allow it to happen because they're incapable of doing it because of ineptitude. It's because of a lot of factors. They are inept, but that's not why I'm saying this. it's because right now, given unlimited resources, you could probably do enough testing and you could probably spend enough money on actually creating new tests for new drugs and maybe keep up. Probably not. You'd still be a little bit behind and somebody would figure out a way around it. But right now, it's not even close. I mean, even if you just look at WADA's spending on testing and research, it goes down every year while their budget goes up. It's bizarre. Because certainly the availability of new, more sophisticated drugs is not declining. So I'm not sure how you reconcile that with the fact that they just decided they don't need to do any more, you know, research. So, I mean, I guess if you gave me the job and said, Floyd, you can't just allow it. You got to figure out how to make it as fair as possible. First of all, I'd probably say I don't want the job. But if I had to do it, I guess most of the resources would go into the science of testing and then trying to figure out a way. This is another huge hurdle, is trying to figure out a way to balance the amount of testing that would be required with just simple human freedom. Like, I don't know how you allow people to have any free time on their own or any meaningful amount of time alone or on their own where you'd be able to have confidence that they didn't do something. I just don't know how that would work. So, I'm not saying that UCI isn't doing it because they're incapable. I'm saying they're not doing it probably because, number one, they don't have the resources. And even if they did, it's probably simply not. I don't know. Is there another solution other than testing? I just don't know what it would be. A lie detector test isn't going to work. What would the solution be? I just don't know what it is.
You kind of answered my last question as well. It was going to be, do you want or do you see a role for yourself to be involved in the sport again at any kind of meaningful international competitive level? I guess that's not in your future, certainly, or part of your plans, is it?
No, not at all. I lived it, and it was, I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was that kind of thrill, like, I'll never feel that again, right? That kind of risk, and just, not the doping risk, but the risk of riding your bike, and the chance of winning being small, but being young enough to still go for it, like, that'll never happen again. And that, for me, that's what cycling was, and I'm not the kind of person that would really want a role in a bureaucracy like that to begin with. So it's not for me, but I like it. And I hope they figure out how to look. It's an awesome sport. It probably won't ever be, an obsession in America like it is in Europe, but it's haven't done it. And anyone that's felt that knows what I'm talking about.
Floyd, you've been great with your time. Thanks a million, man. Cheers.
I hope all is well with you. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.